Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
So, in true spirit of Six Color Secret Podcast, I am calling you from an alternate location because it's summer. And so I am, I'm sitting in my backyard doing a podcast. It's something I can do. So here I am. Hi, I'm outside.
Hi. I don't have a yard in which to do a podcast.
You can do it on like your front porch or something.
I could do it on my front porch. It would get very loud very quickly.
Yeah. Well, it could get loud here. Somebody could be jackhammering at any minute. It's possible. Anything can happen. A bird could begin to squawk from a tree above me. That can happen.
Why do birds suddenly appear whenever we podcast?
It's the high-pitched chirps that we make that are beyond the realm of human hearing, but the birds.
Birds.
That's right. You know it.
I do know it. So, July, huh?
Yeah.
I recorded at least one show this week in which we determined there was not really anything to talk about.
Yeah, seriously, like nothing going on. It's kind of amazing.
I feel like maybe we should operate, and by we I mean like sort of the tech journalism press, like maybe we should just operate like school years, like academic years, where we just, you know, we go on vacation. Or maybe like in France where they like take off August.
Yeah, the problem is that we have to continue doing our jobs. And although I do like what Federico Vittici does, which is just spend all summer working on his iOS review. I don't feel like I can do that because I have lots of podcasts and freelance work to do. And, you know, with Six Colors, I don't want the site to, you know, go dark because we do have people who support us. And but it is one of those times where I am posting less and trying to do a little bit of sort of thinking about the stuff that's happening at the end of the summer, because there's not a lot going on. I mean, there's always some stuff around, but as somebody like you, you know, you and I both do podcasts where we try to have topical items every week clockwise and download. And, in the summer,
sparser.
It's rough going a little bit.
I mean, the inside baseball on writing a whole like review and stuff like that, it's not that you can't do that, but like fundamentally when you're a freelancer, oftentimes, especially if you're writing that, depending on what venue you're writing that review for, it may not be worth more financially
certainly
than anything else that you're doing, and the commensurate time spent on it means it's not always the right investment for your time.
Yeah, Federico definitely feels that this is his signature thing, and he gets a lot of attention for it. And I hope he's a smart guy. I'm sure he's got reasons, and it pencils out for him. But it is kind of amazing to see him, you know, spending the summer working on his review, and have, you know, a couple other people working on his site for him.
It's like when Syracuse used to do his macOS reviews.
Yeah, but he got paid
by
Ars Technica for that one review, and he knew what he got paid. I mean, he probably
didn't. But I feel like that Vittici's review has also reached a canonical level, I feel like, in the same way that Syracuse's reviews used to be kind of the definitive.
I agree. I don't understand about the monetization model of Mac Stories like I do about Ars Technica, but it certainly has succeeded in that perspective, from a content perspective, as the definitive, exhaustive article about it. And it's funny, as somebody who wrote OS X reviews many of the same years as John, it was always funny to see it, because that was just never the review I wanted to write, and never the review that Macworld readers wanted from me when I was writing those for Macworld. And so it's always funny to see, because I feel that way about Federico too. I love his reviews, but it's absolutely not the iOS review that I would want to write. And that's the beauty of it, is that you can get a, you know, USA Today will probably have a 500-word iOS review, right?
Sure.
And it will be written by somebody with a great deal of knowledge, but it will still be 500 words. And, you know, my old reviews were always like 5,000 words, maybe. And, you know, Federico and John, you know, it was 10, 15, 20, 25,000 words, just a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote the iOS reviews of Macworld pretty much every year, and mine were shorter. They were definitely in the multi-thousand. I mean, they might have gotten as high as 10,000 one year, but I don't think regularly. I think it was more in the 5 to 8 range. And I don't know how much overlap we had, because I feel like Vittici's really only started doing his like super in-depth, huge ones in the last
few years. Yeah.
Yeah. They've gotten longer and more in-depth, which is great. I mean, like there are people who love digging into that huge depth level, and like the stuff that he's done, certainly with like the mock-ups before iOS 11 was announced. Right. Like, you know, I find it hard to argue that there's anybody who knows more about it, certainly on an iPad, than he does.
We used to call those exhaustive reviews, we used to call those books.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there used to be a very clear business model, which is you spent your summer writing the book about iOS or the book about the macOS, and then you sold a book. Then in the later days, also an ebook, but you sold a book, and those books came out in the fall, and people bought them, and you made money. And that doesn't happen anymore. So we're left with sort of other ways of getting to, which I'm not saying that it's worse, because the delivery mechanism, it's way better, but that we know from all the tech writers we know that the challenge is, how do you do that kind of work? If people want to read it, is great, but you actually have to make money, and you can't take all summer off to write a thing that everybody loves but that doesn't compensate you for the summer worth of work you put into it.
Yeah, I think what you're trying to say, Jason, is in my day iOS reviews were called books.
Yes, that is. That is. There were rarely any kissing parts, though.
Well, it depends on the review. I mean, you know. Well, I mean, fundamentally, and this is the same thing, right? Like, you know, you can read a bunch of reviews of the same movie, and the whole point of it is you're going to get very different things out of it depending on the reviewer. And the same is true of software to a large extent. People have different experiences. You're reading one person's take on it, and that take could be exhaustive and in-depth, or it could be a high-level overview. It could like certain things and dislike things that might be the opposite in another review. And it's the same thing, too, when you read, like, you know, people who are really into a movie, say, and do these like exhaustive breakdowns, like our right. Star Wars Incomparable episodes,
exactly.
Right? That's very different from what probably Roger Ebert wrote about Star Wars
right.
when it came out, you know, and they're different audiences. And that's the wonderful part of the internet, is that all of these things can coexist, and you don't have one like sort of canonical definitive review of something necessarily. But the downside to it is, as you said, if you are a person who wants to make money off the content you are producing in that way, well, it's tough to do that when there are so many other places that people can go to get what they view as the same quote-unquote
sure.
content.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, it's the classic, you go for scale or you go for depth, and Federico is definitely going for depth and reaching a smaller audience that's going to be, that really wants to eat up that stuff.
Hi, Bird.
They heard our high pitched squeaks, and they've come.
They've come to take us away.
Yeah, it's summer. I'm giving you the full back.
This it feels like I'm. It feels like I'm there.
I did I did one episode of Total Party Kill outside, because it was like a 95 degree day, and there was no way I was going to do it inside because our house was so hot, and it was cooler outside, because that's what happens.
Yep.
Here is the house gets hotter like for 4 hours after it starts to get cooler outside, and there's a period
right.
in the evening where my house is way hotter than it is outside, and
yeah,
we have to
I'm,
open up and do fans or just go outside. So I did,
yeah,
I did a whole D&D thing out here, and it started out, and we did a video for that, right? So it started out, I was light and all that, and by the end you couldn't see me, it was dark.
Yeah, right. Time passes.
Yeah, I was lit by my laptop screen, and that was it. That stupid curvature of the earth, stupid sun going down.
Yeah, it's 90 degrees or so here right now, and we will probably hit that inflection. Right now, I'm indoors with all the windows closed because the house has retained its coolness thus far. But
yes.
Starting in the afternoon is usually when the sauna part begins.
Yeah, yeah. Summer. See, again, it's all the phases of summer. One of the reasons I wanted to come out here, in addition to the fact that I just kind of didn't want to stay inside, and it's summer, and I like to take advantage of it. And here, you know, again, it's the Bay Area. It's probably like, what is it? It's not 11 o'clock in the morning yet, and it's probably 65 degrees, something like that. It's not, you know, it'll get up to, this might be a 75, 80 degree day, but not for a while yet.
Sounds rough.
So I want to be outside, and I think it's kind of fun to do that. Yeah, once I got my – I'm actually using my Mac for this, which I tend not to do. I tend to just use my iPad, but I did. I felt it was appropriate because this is where I do a lot of writing, and a lot of those OS reviews, and even like new iPhones and things. Those reviews come from the backyard here, because this is a nice place to work in the summer, because it isn't too hot usually here. I only come out here when it's a kind of a nice warm day, but not too hot. And it's funny having my MacBook in my lap, because I have been using the iPad out here a lot lately, which is a little bit different. So it's like a little throwback, a little old school. But bottom line, I didn't want to like use the batteries on my recorder and bring like extra cables out and things to do it. It was easier to plug the Audio-Technica USB microphone into my laptop and just carry it out here. So here I am.
Yeah. Well, portable recording studio.
It is. It's amazing how that works. Is there anything else? Hey, Comic-Con is going on. That we are there. I was there. I was in San Diego just before Comic-Con. I was there Comic-Con week, because we left on Monday morning. I was like, here we are, Comic-Con week. They were putting all the like wraps on the buildings. Like there's the hotel, the Hilton Bayside had a big Legion wrap on it. And then there's a lot of Fox has spent a lot of money promoting their New Mutants series that comes out this fall on Fox called The Gifted. So there were a bunch of posters up for that. And also what I would consider an inappropriate – I actually saw it and predicted that there would be a backlash this week, and we'll see if it happens. But it was – I found it kind of unpleasant. They wrapped some of the trolleys – are wrapped for The Gifted, and they're wrapped like prison trains.
Oh boy.
And it says basically like danger, mutants on board, stay back, and they're like right down to like bars on the windows. And I thought to myself, this is uncomfortably like a Holocaust reference. Like don't do this. It is a superhero show. This is not making – and then they go by, and I'm like, I am now uncomfortable. The San Diego trolley has made me uncomfortable. And there are other ones with Conan O'Brien as a bunch of different superhero bobbleheads, and those are great.
I mean, that makes you uncomfortable in a different way. It's fine.
No, I love – and more bobblehead Conan O'Briens or Funko Pop Conan O'Briens. But yeah.
I often wonder about the marketing decisions in these cases because – so is it – I come down on two fronts on this. Are these people really so oblivious that they don't realize the context in which things are going to be received? Because we've seen innumerable cases of people, of a backlash against this kind of thing, that then they have to backpedal and apologize, etc. Or, alternatively, are they counting, is more cynically, are they counting on that very response to basically, there's no such thing as bad PR, right? Like,
I like the, one of the things I like about science fiction and fantasy and superheroes and things like that is, and this comes from growing up watching Star Trek, is they are not about the thing they're about. They're always about something else. They're about the a real world thing, and they're using this metaphor as a way to address broader topics. And the mutant stuff, you know, it is about so many different things. It is about suppressed minorities. Magneto's story has always been about him being a Holocaust survivor. There are direct parallels there. There are parallels with gay people, because it's about mutants. It's a very much a coming out kind of story. There are lots of great political and social parallels and stories to tell. But when you're doing marketing at a Comic-Con, to put on rolling stock on local light rail a pretty direct Holocaust reference. It's like, I feel like that maybe is not the smartest decision, unless you are expecting an uproar. It's like, I get like you want to engage these topics, but this is not really engaging the topic. It's just like taking the imagery and putting it in on the streets of San Diego. It seems kind of like a bad decision. So anyway, that's my prediction. It may turn out to be nothing, but my prediction is that there will be a mini brouhaha about those trains.
It seems like a corollary to when we often see in our line of work engineers or developers implementing features that, you know, seem unwise from a different perspective, right? Like things that, that seem to intrude upon privacy or that are just otherwise sort of invasive features. And a lot of times it's because nobody has taken that step back to be like, yeah, that is a cool idea, but the fact that, you know, we can do it doesn't mean that we should do it. And so you will see oftentimes a lot of backlash against features like that, which are just, I think, tend to be people who are oblivious and not really thinking these things through, which may also be the case here.
And there's the matter of stepping through and going like, this makes sense if you understand the backstory and what the show is about and all these things. I'm like, okay, yes, but...
But it doesn't matter because
you're standing on a street in San Diego and a train rolls by that looks like a prison train taking people to a concentration camp. Maybe not, right? Like, there's only one level you need to get there, and most people are not going to have the other levels or the other backstory. But you're right.
And
it's not impossible that it's a cynical ploy.
And making a show about that is different because of the way it comments on it rather than the marketing of that show.
Yeah.
Right? Like, your show can be a parallel to, you know, okay, people, like you said, things aren't about what they're about. They have levels of subtext. But when you're using things like that for marketing, people get much more sensitive to it because it's seen much more from the commercial angle rather than the narrative angle, right? So, I mean, not to say there isn't, I mean, I'm thinking particularly of the backlash that's happened in the last couple days of this, announcement that they're doing, the guys who run the Game of Thrones series are doing a series about an alternate history where the Confederacy wins the Civil War.
Or at least there's I think the Confederacy, it wins in the sense, it doesn't take over the North, but it
doesn't die
it
either,
doesn't die,
right?
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of backlash on that, and I think rightfully so, especially because the optics of it that are attached to pretty much every story I've seen are these two guys who are white guys.
Yeah.
And so, given especially the climate in the world today, it seems like the messaging of that is going to be very challenging.
And if you look at the press release, it appears very clearly like what they were trying to do is fight against that, because they announced that the other executive producers and co-showrunners of the show are these two other people who I believe are both African American. And I think that was their attempt to say, look, it's not just white guys, you know, that we have black voices who are running the show as well. But that's not how the story played anywhere.
Unfortunately, so like, that did not work for them.
Yeah. I mentioned Comic-Con also because I went to Comic-Con. The only times I've gone to Comic-Con, I did for work, which seems really weird. But when the iPad came out, I had this feeling like it would be a great comic reading medium. And I'd already been talking to the Comixology people, especially, and their competitors about their apps on the iPhone. But with the iPad, it felt like it was like going to be a transformative thing for digital comics and for comic reading in general. And so I went to Comic-Con 3 times, I want to say. And it was generally because I was going to not the big panels where movie stars talk about their next movie, but the discussions with comics professionals and the people in the industry who distribute comics about the iPad and how it might impact them. And that was really interesting. This is also why I don't go anymore, in addition to the fact that the crowds are totally insane, is that story has passed. Because the answer is, the iPad was huge. It really did change how comics are consumed by a lot of people. It really did give the digital comics world a huge push. And yes, they're also used for creation. Yes, digital comics have influenced how people tell stories. All of those things happened, but I'm not sure there's as much new there, so I don't go anymore, which is fine. But that was always my tech angle at Comic-Con. I was like, I think there's a reason for these things to align, and they did, and I went, and then they stopped aligning anymore. And
yeah, sure.
I haven't been back. But it was, because that is, talk about industries that have been disrupted by tech, like comics, totally disrupted by tech, just... comic stores survive, but it's not going to be what it was because lots of people are reading digitally, and that's great. I love it. I read way more comics than I ever did before since I was a teenager because of it.
Yeah, the technology. I mean, we've talked about Marvel Unlimited a bunch, and I have been less I've consumed fewer comics there over the last few months. I've sort of taken a break from it. But I'm sure at some point I will jump back into it. I found myself reading fewer comics there. I borrowed a few graphic novels from friends to read, which I've enjoyed. I recently read our friend Anthony Johnston's all four volumes of The Fuse, which he wrote, which I quite enjoyed. And I have a couple other things sitting around that I need to dive into at some point as well. I tend to go in waves on that sort of thing.
There's a bee flying from flower to flower in my backyard.
Yeah, there's a bug crawling on my Sonos over there. Watching that. Well, this is wildlife spotting with Jason and Dan.
I had a bunch of birds landed on my roof edge while you were talking a while ago.
I could hear some very loud tweeting at a couple points.
But they left. I was going to do a live play-by-play as they brought me, started to dress me like in a Dickie cartoon, spring over my clothes, hang them on me. But then they left.
That's what Apple's doing next.
Birds that
clothe you and bring you your food and all that good stuff.
What I'm saying is nature, people. Nature is happening outside right now.
You can't escape it. It's everywhere.
I suppose.
Yeah. Summer. Other than that, I was trying to think of other things that are going on. It's
there's not a lot going on.
There's not a lot going on. There really isn't.
No.
Have you played with your Echo Show any further?
I'm playing Jeopardy every day. That's fun.
The Jeopardy is that's a good implementation of Jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah. Using the screen is good. I play music on it, and it sounds pretty much like the old one does, but it's got info about what it's playing, and it'll play lyrics and stuff, which is kind of fun. I got an email survey from Amazon saying, tell us how you feel about
you too. I was wondering if you also received that, because
I did.
I also got it, and I found it seemed very pointed at a couple things that clearly they have gotten a lot of feedback on.
What are the things that you haven't liked about it? And one of the items is customizability of home screen. And I was like, yes, yes. I went on about that a lot.
Yeah, I wrote about that. I added a couple other, to me, it seems surprising that there isn't an easier way to just make it show essentially a digital photo frame, right?
Oh, yeah, I saw that in there where it was like just let me do my things, just let me do my photos, just rotate.
Just show
photos.
Me, yeah, when you're not doing anything else, just be like a digital photo frame slowly.
Smart idea.
Yeah, why not? It seems like much better than just taking it up with one random picture. And also, I noticed specifically getting rid of the helpful tips was another thing that they had mentioned somewhere else. So I felt very good about that I at least, and knowing them, as we've discussed before, they tend to iterate very quickly on these things. So I would be surprised if we did not see a substantive update, especially because it shipped with what felt like, as you mentioned, kind of very rudimentary or unfinished, and
I have a hard time believing they are surprised. I think they shipped it knowing that the home screen was kind of a disaster and that they were going to have to keep working on it.
And now they have a much wider number of people who have it, therefore they can collect more information about how it's being used rather than just testing it internally. And I think in part they didn't know exactly what people were going to want to do with that, so they're learning as they go. And honestly, people gave a lot of crap for them for this, but I've just been having a conversation with one of my cousins and a friend of mine who both just got Apple Watches, and we're talking about the exercise features and their frustration with the exercise tracking. And I was talking with my cousin and saying, it really has only very recently, I feel like, got to the point where I'm more willing to recommend the Apple Watch to your average person. The first couple of years of it were very rough. They didn't know exactly what they wanted to do with it. There were major software upgrades that really changed the direction of it. And also, it has proved to be a device that improves over time, especially with the things like I wear mine pretty much every day and have for the last several years. And I find the activity tracking has gotten much more accurate and reliable for me.
I agree. Although I'm still frustrated that I go for a run and 2 minutes in, I realize that I haven't turned on the run on my Apple Watch.
The workout.
And it doesn't know. And it's like, you should totally know that I'm running now. You should know and it doesn't. That right. frustrates like, me. But yes, when, in general, its tracking is way better than it used to be.
And they were specifically, one of them was pointing out that as someone who is a bit older and has in a different physical condition, the fact that it has a sort of static threshold for what counts as exercise without starting a workout can be frustrating. And that is something perhaps that they should look into finding a way to adjust so that people of different levels of fitness can all, you know, get that the, you know, their money's worth slash their fitness activities worth of it. I mean, and that's one of the things I think they did when they added, you know, workouts for people in wheelchairs, for example, right? Like that's a great example of these people have, you know, people who are in wheelchairs have a very different threshold in terms of how activity is registered. So you need to be able to have a way to record and measure that. Otherwise, the normal way the sensors work just isn't going to work for them. So I'm kind of, you know, optimistic that they will continue to refine that as it goes and find more fine grain and more accurate ways of tracking people's activity in ways that can help them. But overall, my experience has tended to get better over time, even as I feel that I use my watch for fewer things, but it's better at the fewer things that I use it for.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. That sounds right. I that mirrors my approach too. Yeah, I don't know. New tech, this is always the conundrum with new tech, right? Is you can, if you release it when it's like perfect, you'll never, right out of ship. You've got to release it before then, and your competitors are releasing before then, but you end up in this race where everybody's releasing things that are kind of not done, and then the race is to make them better. And, you know, the Echo was like that. The Echo Show is like that now. The Apple Watch was like that. And I prefer Apple's approach with the original iPhone, which was what it doesn't do, you know, what it does great. And then there's lots of stuff it doesn't do. And I would right. prefer things that do that. But it seems like a modern tech product very often is just sort of, here's a whole bunch of stuff and we'll figure it out as we go.
Right.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is because, as we said with the Echo, same thing with the Apple Watch. I don't think until they really had a huge number of people out there using it that they had a good idea of how people were going to use it. And that's, you know, that's often the case, as you said, with new tech. Like,
well,
you
I
can
mean,
test it in your lab and you can have your employees testing it, but that's not always going to tell you about the way that people, the mass consumers, are going to view something.
Right, but Apple could have been opinionated about it and said, this is how people are going to use it. And they didn't. They're like, oh, you know, what doesn't it do? Here it is. It does all these things. Good luck. And then yes, you do have to listen to your customers and refine. That absolutely does happen. But I still feel like it was a mistake to,
oh, sure.
to launch the Apple Watch with such an unfocused approach.
Agree. It was very un-Apple-like in that way, too, because Apple is usually very top-down in the way that it does things, right? Like, even when the original iPhone came out and there were things it didn't do, Apple's always, you know, sort of throws out the line like, no, well, that's a choice. We decided not to do that. And even if they backtrack later and add stuff and, you know, they tend to impose that rather than taking that bottom-up approach of, it does everything, let's see what you do with it, right? Like, for consumers, at least.
Yeah, I think so. And I would have preferred a little more of that. Then again, the reason they might not have done that with the Apple Watch is very specifically that they didn't know, or that they all disagreed about what they were going to get out of it. And so they said, look, let's just make it an app platform and we'll put these things in and we'll see what happens. And they are learning now, and that the product, I'm happy with my Apple Watch, and one of the reasons I'm happy with it is it has continued to get better and be more useful. And also, maybe my expectations of it are now constrained to the things I know I want from a device like that and what I know it's capable of doing. And you put those things together. I mean, could it be better? Yeah, it could be a lot better.
Sure.
I still get frustrated by Apple's whole notification stack. Frustrates me. Like, I feel like there's more information to be done there. I think maybe watchOS 4 is one of the things where they're trying with that, you know, more like Siri-like feature.
The proactive type.
Yeah. That they're trying to address that of like what's going on a little bit clearer. But that's a loud bird.
It is a loud bird.
Hope you people are loving these birds.
This is it sounds kind of to me like you're in the zoo or something.
I'm in the aviary now. Yeah, I've entered the aviary section
in the luxurious Snell estate.
It's like a mockingbird. You know, did you ever notice? I suspect these mockingbirds all sound like old car alarms, because at one point all the mockingbirds learned the car alarms, and now those car alarms are all gone, but the mockingbirds are all still making those noises.
Or perhaps someone is trying to steal your mockingbird.
Uh-oh. Then it's in true form of any car alarm, which is they make a lot of noise and nobody does anything.
That's true. That's true. And then the mockingbird still gets eaten by your cat or something.
Something like that. We try to keep the cat inside so he doesn't do that.
That's probably smart.
Well, it's summer. I think we've done enough secret
enough
podcasting.
Damage for one day.
I think so. But, you know, there's always next week.
Indeed.
I'm sure nothing will happen next week, too. If we're lucky,
people should write in and tell us what they want us to talk about.
You know,
or,
speaking of which, we are doing Six Colors Magazine in the next week, so that people could write in and tell us what to talk about on the podcast. I am always amused because I don't promote this podcast on Twitter or anything because it's secret for subscribers, and I'll still get tweets. I assume you do too, where people will pick up on something that we said, and I'm like, oh, people are listening. It's nice.
It's funny when it's out of context too. I'll see it in the incomparable member Slack. People will respond to us as though we are having that conversation right now. And sometimes it takes me a minute to be like, what are they talking? Oh, right.
Oh,
that
yeah.
podcast.
That's what that was. So yes, let us know what we should talk about here. Let us know what we should write about in the magazine. That's always welcome. And Dan mentioned the member Slack. I'm toying with the idea of doing a member Slack for Six Colors too, just a place for Six Colors subscribers to hang out and talk with one another, because the incomparable one has turned out to be pretty successful, I would say. And
I agree.
Not a heavy burden for us. That was my worry, is that it was going to be something that I didn't want it to be like the Slack where you come and talk to Jason, dance for him. And it's not. They're all talking amongst themselves, and we drop in and talk, and it's cool. So I think that might actually be fun to do for Six Colors, but there's some technical issues that I have to work through to make that happen. But it might happen. So just a warning, a little bonus, secret product plan warning for you subscribers who help us keep the lights on and keep us working away during the summer months when we might otherwise just go to the beach and never come back. It could happen.
Or just go to the backyard and never return to the house.
That's fine. I got a grill here. I got some power outlets. I can make it.
That's everything you need.
Yeah, I could live in the backyard. All right. Thanks to everybody out there for listening and subscribing. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.